Hi, this is Saqib Rahman from the OrthoClips podcast series. And today we're going to be talking about when to transfuse ortho trauma patients, conservative versus liberal strategies. And on the call, I have Dr. Brian Mullis. He's a professor of orthopedic surgery at Indiana University School of Medicine. And we also have a co-author, Dr. Leilani Mullis, who's assistant professor of clinical anesthesia and the chair of the residency selection committee at the Indiana University School of Medicine also. And they are the lead authors on the paper entitled Orthopedic Trauma and Anemia, Conservative versus Liberal Transfusion Strategy, a prospective randomized study. And this was in the January 2024 Journal of Orthopedic Trauma. So with that, I'd like to welcome you both on the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Great. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So I first wanted to ask how you got interested and involved in this study, how it came about, and how you both personally got involved.
Well, I guess I can start. I've always been conservative in transfusion and learned it from my mentors, and I started my practice in 2006 at what was then Wichard Hospital, one of the hospitals that university docs cover. And relatively early in my career, probably around the second or third year of my practice, a nurse termed me as unsafe for patient care because I was allowing young, healthy patients to run down a hemoglobin of 5 even when they were asymptomatic. And so I was told I had to come to the medical executive committee and defend my practice of medicine. And so I had a medical student just pull the day. We just pulled all my patients. And of course, there were other surgeons who practiced at the same hospital. So we just pulled all the trauma patients that the orthopedic service touched. In other words, they had to have some kind of musculoskeletal injury for us to put them into the retrospective study. And we looked at those when they dropped below hemoglobin of 9, did they get transfused? If so, how many units? Did they get below 7? Of course, my patients typically got below 7, and other patients didn't. If it was one of my partners on call covering or general surgery was still monitoring the patient. So there's a variety of reasons why they might get transfused. So anyway, long story short is that was sort of the beginning of it. So we pulled the data. It showed not only was it safe, what I was doing, and of course I didn't invent it. There's a lot of other surgeons who've been doing it over the years, but it was not only safe, but my patients were doing better. They had a lower complication rate than patients who were being routinely transfused just for hemoglobin 7 when they weren't having symptoms. So that was the start of the prospective study, because of course, retrospective, we presented at the Academy, but it was a retrospective study, and that always raises questions and concerns, the validity of the findings. And so had a statistician pull the data from the retrospective study. And I said, okay, how many patients do we need for a prospective study to get some meaningful data? And so really it was designed as a pilot. The prospective study was designed as a pilot study to give us some meaningful data. Statistician told me we needed about 100 patients, 50 in each cohort. And we would essentially randomize for them to do what many consider standard of care, to get transfused if their hemoglobin got to 7 versus what I typically did, where I run them down to 5. We chose 5.5 because, a lot of the other surgeons weren't comfortable running down to below 5. So that was the compromise to get it, to get the study off the floor. And of course, I needed help from anesthesia, which is how my wife got involved. So that's how I got Lonnie to get the anesthesiologist on board. She was instrumental in helping with a lot of the escape criteria that we outlined in that paper, because the caveat is, if they're in surgery, you can't know if the patient's symptomatic or not. Because typically I would only transfuse if they were having symptoms at rest. And so that's Lonnie and her colleagues helped develop, I should say Dr. Mullis, since we're being recorded, but the other Dr. Mullis helped since they essentially designed a lot of those escape criteria for when patients were under anesthesia. Probably about halfway through, Todd McKinley was the chair of the Data Monitoring Safety Board. About halfway through, Todd called me and says, Brian, I just sat down with the statistician as, an interim review, and not only are the conservative patients doing better, but the liberal patients are doing a lot worse. We may have to stop the study. And so I said, Todd, you're in charge of the DMSB, but just keep in mind, like, unless you guys are sure, if we stop this midway through, no one's going to believe the data. And so he talked with the other members, and they decided to let it proceed since it did essentially represent standard of care, was the group that was not doing quite as well. And I'm glad he did, because what we found, we actually have two papers. So I think you quoted the one in JOT, which I believe was the 1 year study. We also did a 30 days study that just came out in JAAOS. The reason we did the two is, of course, you lose patients to follow-up over the course of that year. And most patients are making transfusion decision, or most surgeons are making transfusion decisions based on their fear that there's going to be an acute inpatient problem if you don't. And so that's why we did the two. And what we found was at 30 days, there was a higher rate of deep infection in the liberal group, the group that was being transfused if they dropped below 7 and were asymptomatic. But as far as the deep infection data, that fell out after 30 days, because we did have some deep infections present in the conservative group after 30 days, and more in the liberal group as well. So the short of it is, I know I've been talking for a while, but the short of it is there was a higher rate of infection found both at 30 days and 1 year. There was a higher rate of deep infection at 30 days, a higher rate of overall infection, superficial infection at 1 year. And keep in mind, we had significant loss to follow up at a year. So we lost, I want to say, 30, a little over 35 patients or so, as memory serves. We also looked at functional outcomes. So functional outcomes were the same at 6 months and 1 year, regardless of which cohort. So, and we looked at length of stay. So there really did not appear to be any advantage to giving patients more blood. And in fact, the patients who got more blood were at higher risk for infection.
So just for the listeners, can you explain the inclusion criteria? Like, did patients have multiple injuries? Were they isolated? Major orthopedic trauma? What kind of patients were you including, or which patients were you excluding, to be clear?
Essentially, any patient with a musculoskeletal injury. If we were consulted, then the patient could be included. Typically, keep in mind, we were only including patients whose hemoglobin was dropping below 9. So most of these patients were polytrauma patients, meaning two or more long bone fractures. A lot of them were pelvic ring. Well, I shouldn't say thought. There were some pelvic ring injuries, some acetabulum fractures. But we did compare the two cohorts. The two different cohorts did have similar types of injuries and had similar amounts of surgery, because as you can imagine, a lot of these patients had more than one, not only orthopedic surgery, but many times may have had a procedure done by the general surgeons for an XLAP or what have you. But the two cohorts were similar in nature.
Got it. Dr. Leilani Moles, you got to tell me a little bit about getting buy-in, because to
Right.
me, and maybe this is maybe tips for other investigators out there, when you have a study like this, that buy-in is probably the biggest barrier, I would
Right.
think.
I think when we started this study, we initially started at, were we still at Wishard when we started? Which is a level one trauma center, but it's also the county hospital. And sometimes resources, are a factor for what is available for you to even give patients. And so for us, finding safe ways to be conservative with transfusion, I think, was something that all of my partners and I strive for. And so with the information that he had from the retrospective study, that gave us, I think, a good amount of security with the idea that we could have these patients run with lower hemoglobin without having, significant bad outcomes. So, You know, that was one of the things that as a group, and at that time, I want to say I probably had 15 partners, and all of them had worked closely with orthotrauma. So these were not, you know, new injuries that we were seeing or used to seeing in the operating room. So having that buy-in was actually fairly easy with my group. Once we had established clear guidelines for escape criteria for transfusion, obviously we always want safety to be paramount for the patients. So we spent a lot of time going through and figuring out what was, you know, what were the triggers that would have us think, yeah, we should go ahead and we should transfuse these patients, even if they still had a hemoglobin above 5.5, that they were in that group. It worked out well. And we all, you know, just worked together. Once we started, we realized it was taking a long time to enroll patients into the study. And then we branched out to another level one trauma center in Indianapolis. Luckily, the person that I worked with there was somebody who had been in our residency program and kind of already knew how we worked. And so we had buy-in pretty quickly with them. And then we reached out to another trauma center after that. So once that, you know, it was established that yes, our patients were doing well. And again, these were young, healthy trauma patients. You know, they didn't have other comorbidities that we were worrying about other than really their acute injuries. It was pretty easy to get anesthesiologists on board, again, because blood itself is sometimes a limited resource.
Yeah, it sure is. What's been the reception outside of your institution, you know, at the conferences, or what you're hearing from other people, maybe in the community, orthopedic or otherwise?
Well, you said outside the institution, but if you don't mind, I'll take a little leeway with the question and tell you.
Sure.
Definitely changed how patients are managed at the institution, at least at the one where we started it. So, you know, when we started the study, Jerry Gomez, who's now passed away, he was the chief of surgery. He told me I was going to be murdering patients if I ran their hemoglobin at 5. Now, keep in mind, you know, there's close to 80 articles on Jehovah's Witness showing that you can run their hemoglobin down to 5 and they don't die. But everyone's passionate that 7's the magic number. So we start out and the general surgeons would do a week at a time on service. So when Jerry was on for that week, I wouldn't be able to enroll any patients because he just refused for any patients in his service to be in the study. By the end of the study, there's a reason we had 3 protocol deviations, because by the end of the study, Jerry Gomez was not only seeing these patients that were being enrolled when his younger partners were on service and those patients were doing fine. So the protocol deviations were at the end of the study. I had a few patients in the liberal group he refused to transfuse because their hemoglobin dropped below 7, but he had learned or seen that that was fine. And so it certainly changed behaviors and opened up a lot of eyes locally at Indiana University. You know, I've given now these talks at the Orthopedic Trauma Association. We were one of the highlight papers at the Academy on specialty day. So they've received a fair amount of national attention. I just gave a talk at our Indiana Orthopedic State Society meeting, and it was met with well there. So I think, you know, I think it's, there's always going to be people that are just feel the dogma of more blood is better. And, you know, I'm not going to change their minds, but I think there's a lot of people that are data driven and believe in evidence-based medicine. And I think those are the ones that are open to exploring if they can be more conservative. You know, one of the questions I got at the OTA was a young trauma surgeon stood up and said, well, how do I convince my anesthesiologist to do this? And I said, well, I know it's an uphill battle. It helps when you're married to one. You know, I'm happy to give grand rounds. You know, things like what you're doing are great, where we can get the information out there and just make sure people are educated. You know, obviously I'm a believer, and I'm glad the study worked out the way it did.
And likewise for anesthesia, I had the opportunity to present our 30-day research 2 years ago at the American Society for Anesthesiology annual meeting. And there it was actually awarded one of the best clinical studies trials during that meeting. And then a year later presented the 1-year findings as well. So anesthesiologists are hearing more about it as well. Which again, you know, when you talk about buy-in and will your anesthesiologist let your patient run with a hemoglobin down to 5.5, I think the more we get that word out, you know, the better the reception will be, and that you'll see a lot more conservative strategy out there as far as blood transfusion goes.
Got it. What do you think are some future directions with regard to like related investigations? Obviously, you guys did a randomized prospective trial of say a high level trial. What could be some future directions, do you guys think, if that could take place?
Well, this was meant to be a pilot, and the statistician told me, at least if we're looking at overall infection, there's really no reason to go bigger with more centers, more numbers. But we were underpowered for specifically deep infection at 1 year. So that would be the next step for any young listeners you have to the podcast. You know, this has been exhausting for me over the last 7-8 years, you know, running one of these studies. So I proved it was safe, which was really my goal. I think if there's a young investigator out there that wants to take it to the next level and actually prove that you may be harming patients by giving them more blood, at least with respect to deep infection, then it would be a multi-center study. And you need, I'd have to go back and look, but it was over 400.
Right. I think it was 344 per arm, I think.
I can look real quick, but that would be the next step if somebody wanted to take it to the next level. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. So our postdoc analysis show we would need essentially 450 patients to be adequately powered for deep infection.
It's a lot. It would have to be multi-center. I mean, I wouldn't be out of the question to say that it might be within the purview of something like Metric, you know, looking at infection and trauma patients. And
yeah, we've had interest from Metric. Metric actually, one of the, you know, Todd McKinley is heavily involved in it. And so he mentioned it to some of the Metric investigators. I don't know that I have the energy left in me after this. I'd love to see a younger investigator take it and run with it, but who knows?
I hear you. Well, it's really, I think, impactful data. It's something that we all deal with. It's a question that many of us didn't even know was a question could be answered otherwise. Like you said, I think a lot of people feel like when you're down to hemoglobin of 5, you're in trouble. That's I think a fair statement. And I think you've shown that people should question that, and it is safe in this patient population. And this is not like some small subgroup. It's the majority of what a lot of people are dealing with at level one trauma centers.
And keep in mind, I think we should emphasize, this was not looking at the resuscitation of patients. So I think patients that can get in trouble at 5, even if they're young and healthy, is when you're acutely bleeding them down to 5.
Sure.
You know, in a trauma patient who's essentially going into shock. So that is a different question than what we looked at. We looked at after the patient's been resuscitated and they're trickling down and they're not having any symptoms at rest, those patients, it's not just this study, but, you know, again, there's multiple reports out there on Jehovah's Witnesses where, they do fine down to 5. Now, I get nervous below 5. You can see some reversible injury below 5, such as kidney injury that typically is reversible. But, you know, if you get down to 3 or less, that's not compatible with life. So 5 is where I start to get nervous.
Right. And intraoperatively for the anesthesiologist, the big thing that I stressed a lot at the ASA was, you know, these patients are anemic, but we are also doing our best to make sure that they aren't hypovolemic overall. They're not hypotensive, right? You're still maintaining homeostasis even in that anemic state. So that's the big part of it for us. They still need to have adequate blood pressure. They still have to have good urine output. They can't, you know, be tachycardic and hypotensive. That's not helping anybody, but there are ways to do it safely without having to pull that transfusion trigger before you get to 5.5.
Right. Or I guess another example, I mean, you have a patient who's maybe going to surgery and their hemoglobin is 7 that morning. And now you're like, okay, well, do I need to transfuse the patient before we even go down? I mean, do you hold up the case? Do you order blood to start giving it right away in the OR? I mean, those are all real decisions that are probably happening right now on these patients. And this maybe says, like you said, if that patient's resuscitated, it's just trickled down and they're at seven, they probably don't need to be held up for surgery to for a trigger point of seven, because maybe that's not the trigger.
And I'd be prepared. I'd have that patient crossed
Sure.
if blood loss is expected to have blood in the room. But the point is, you don't have to, in air quotes, tank someone up at seven to get them to nine just because they're going to surgery.
Right.
And although we didn't find it in this study, other studies have shown a dose-dependent risk. With each unit you give, it's an independent risk factor to the patient. We were underpowered to detect that in this study. But that's just something to keep in mind. It's another dogma that's just frankly incorrect. It's not, if you're giving blood, well, then I should just give two or three units because I'm giving
Exactly.
it. Each unit of blood you give is a risk.
Right. And I think that was something we stressed to our residents. So for 7 years while this study was going on, I think we had a pause during 2020. But the residents who were involved with some of these cases, we would check the hemoglobin with every unit we transfused. A lot of times they'll order two units to be typed and crossed and brought to the OR. Well, if they start a unit, they all want to grab a second unit right away. You don't need to do that. And I think that is probably one of the strengths of the IU program now, as our residents realize you don't have to give all the blood that comes into the room. You need to assess the patient with each unit and figure out, are there ongoing blood losses that you need to look at? And I think that's great for us and our program. We have 30 residents per class, so we're a big program, and I'm glad that we're getting that information out there as well.
That's great. A lot of good teaching points, and I think you guys explained it really well. And with that, I think we'll wrap it up. I've been talking to Doctors Brian and Leilani Mullis from Indiana University School of Medicine. We've been talking about when to transfuse orthotrauma patients, conservative versus liberal strategies. Again, their paper was published in the January Journal of Orthopedic Trauma, and also recently in the JAAOS. I want to thank you guys both for coming on the podcast. It was great.
Well, thanks for inviting
Thank
us. We
you.
really appreciate it.